ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 80 टेक्स्ट 41 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय डिसाइपल्स ऑफ हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद। Yeah, if you have it in a bigger form, that's better. Etad eva hi sat chishyai kartavyam guru nishkrutam yadvai vishuddha bhavena sarvarthart marpanam guru. Yeah, translation. This indeed is the duty of all true disciples to repay the debt to their spiritual master by offering him with pure hearts their wealth and even their very lives. Purport. One engages one's body to realize one's purposes. The body is also the basis of the material conception of I, while one's fortune is the basis of the conception of mine. Thus, by offering everything to the spiritual master, one realizes oneself to be an eternal servant of the Lord. The spiritual master does not exploit the disciple, but rather engages him fully in Krishna consciousness for the disciple's eternal benefit. I'm scheduled to offer initiation into the most glorious Brahma Madhva Gaurya Vaishnava Sampradaya just a little later today, with more than 100 candidates for initiation, which is the largest batch that I've ever done at one time. I don't start thinking of devotees in terms of batches, just like you have batches of chickens. Everyone is a unique individual. Amazing. Krishna is so amazing. Krishna himself is the... he is... One name for him, Sarvasagar. He's the ocean of everything. Everything's in him. All moods, personalities, everything. So everyone reflects that in a particular way. Everyone's individual. For me it seems to be quite many, but we have to remember that it's a very, in terms of numbers, it's very insignificant. In terms of the even the human population of the world, what to speak of the Eta Brahmanda Bhari Ananta Jivagan Chaurashi Lakha Jornite Kariye Brahman. What to speak of the unlimited numbers of jivas within the whole universe. So we had a lot of work to do. For me it's a big number. For some of my god brothers, it's nothing special to initiate so many in one session. So we should always remember that those who are spreading Krishna consciousness, Bhurida janaha tavakatamritam tapta jivanam kavibi urditam kalmashapaham Smarana Mangalam. What is the next line? Smarana Mangalam Shivadartadam Bhuvigrananthiye Bhurida Jana. As the gopis, in praise of Krishna, said that everyone is burning in this material world, but the nectar of narrations of Krishna gives relief from everyone. We're burning, our whole life is just like being in a fire, but we get relief from that by hearing the nectarian topics of Krishna, which is auspicious, all auspicious for everyone, very pleasing to the ears of the pious people. Therefore, those who are distributing this nectar of Krishna Katha, they are the most magnanimous personalities. So we shouldn't get in this consciousness of thinking, well, my guru, that's it, finished. Everyone else is bogus. We should appreciate so many great devotees bringing more and more people to Krishna consciousness, and then those more and more people are bringing others to Krishna consciousness. In this way, Srila Prabhupada's mission is expanding. Of course, there are some problems, no doubt, in the manner of expansion. And still, we should recognize the so many good things are going on in this movement, and we should appreciate that. Just a note as a point of etiquette, as Srila Prabhupada, he wanted that male initiates, at least at the time of initiation, they have their head shaved with shika, and fresh clothes should be worn for all initiates. Fresh means new clothes, dhoti, sari. And for the lady devotees, at least at the time of initiation, actually should do it all the time, is the parting should be in the middle, not at the side. There should be a parting, first of all, and in the hair. Should be in the middle, and the hair should be tied with braids, not just loose. So at least at the time of initiation, should do that. So this verse we read, I'll read it again. This indeed is the duty of all true disciples, to repay the debt to their spiritual master by offering him with pure hearts their wealth and even their very lives. This was spoken by Sandipani Muni to Krishna. So Krishna, apart from being Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum, who is worshipable as the guru of the whole universe, he's also guru in the manner of being the best disciple. This was spoken to Sandipani, to Krishna and Sudama, after they had gone into the forest to collect wood, even though at the time they were going, it looked like there was a storm brewing, and indeed there was a tremendous storm. You all know the story, how Krishna nevertheless wanted to take that difficulty. Sandipani didn't want to engage Krishna and Balaram in menial services, because he could understand their very special boys, but they nevertheless like to do that. Short but very meaningful purport. One engages one's body to realize one's purposes. It seems like it's such a truism that it's hardly worth stating. But it's so obvious that we don't see it often. We don't even think about it. Most people don't. Outside of spiritual culture, those who are engaged in spiritual culture, people think about their body a lot, but they don't think of it at all in the way that people who are cultivating Atma Gyan do. Atma Gyan, or in the case of Buddhists, Anatma Gyan, whatever that means. I couldn't understand it. I don't think they understand it either. is not really understandable. But anyway, both Vedantic transcendentalists and Buddhists and related schools, they understand that we are not the body. And of course Buddhists, they understand that we're not anything else either. We're not anything else. We are and we're not. We can't say we are and we can't say we're not, and we can't say we are both are and are not, and we can't say we're neither are or we are not. Okay, we're not teaching Buddhism. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for saving us from all that nonsense. Those who are engaged in Vedantic understanding, they see the body in a very different way to those who are on the platform of Dehatma Buddhi, considering the body to be the self. Such persons think a lot about their body. Most of them, that's pretty much all they think about, or about the bodies and the minds of others as conceived of within the bodily concept of life. In other words, in terms of thinking, I am this body, and everyone else's body is them. So one engages one's body to realize one's purposes. It's almost axiomatic that the body is supposed to be used for whatever you want to do. You have whatever goal you have in mind, you have to do it via your body. What is that? Kalidasa Shariyama Dhyam Dharma Karma Dharma Artana, something like that. Another of those half-learned things for myself. That beginning with the body, one has to pursue dharma and all one's desired pursuits. This is sometimes quoted by materialistic people too. Or used to be quoted by materialistic people when there were materialistic people who used to know things about Shastra or related topics. Kalidas is not exactly Shastra, but widely studied. Used to be. So they would argue, yes, the body is the most important. That's the most important thing. You see, you can't do anything, you can't even pursue self-realization without the body. That's true. But it doesn't mean that the body is all important. The body is required to cultivate self-realization. But self-realization begins with understanding that the body is not important. Nridayam adyam sulabham sudurlabham. This human, the first advantage anyone who can understand this statement has is that they're in a human body, because with rare exceptions, those who are not in human bodies, jivas presently encased in bodies other than humans, can't understand that we are in a bad situation in this material world. They can't begin to understand spiritual knowledge. So now we have it, it's very rarely achieved. So this body should be used for fulfilling one's purposes. What is one's purpose? One should think very carefully about what one's purpose is. Most people don't think. They simply go along with the tide, whatever others are doing. I just noticed this, since coming to Somnath, there's a new, here in India, it's probably imported from the West, some new hairstyle for young men in which the, how to explain it? It looks like there's a cake on top of their head. Something like that. So that's the fashion. Fashion are the Someone decided it's a fashion and then others start to follow it. No thinking. You don't think about their purpose of life at this point in time is to have their hair in that particular hairstyle. Parabhavastavada bodha jata yavanna jignasata atmatatvam. One's whole existence is simply what to speak. People think I will be a success, but it's all everything. The real purpose of life is defeated as long as we do not inquire into the nature of the self. So one's purpose should be more than ahara nidra bhaya maitun, which the animals do, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. One should go higher than this. For that, it is required a guru. Actually, even in material life, one requires a guru. But the real meaning of a guru is one who gives direction in spiritual life. In the bodily concept of life, we try to use the body to acquire possessions for ourselves and the mind to find a comfortable situation for ourselves, or if we're more ambitious, to dominate others. But by offering everything to the guru, we overcome this tendency to think in terms of I and mine, which entangles us in this material world. We often hear from others and experience ourselves that it seems very difficult to overcome the urges of the senses. Vacho vegam manasa krodha vegam jiva vegam udaropasta vegam etan vegam yovishaheta dhira sarvamapi mam prithivim shashishat. The six principal urges which bind us in material life are the urge to speak, the urges of the mind and of anger, that we provoked to anger, the urge of the tongue to eat all nice foods, the urge of the belly to pack it full. Or sometimes in the spirit of bhog and tyag, so the urge to fast, that can also be one phase of sense gratification. The urges of the genitals, who can overcome these? This very sober person can overcome these. Such a person is qualified to accept disciples all over the world. But it seems very difficult. And as long as we're controlled by these urges, then especially the sexual urge will bind us in this material world. Pungsa striya mithuni bhavametam tayoraho hridaya grantim ahuhu ato griha kshetra sutapta vitair janasya mohoyam ahammameti. This thinking in terms of I, me and mine, the bodily concept of life, is expanded in terms of my home, my country, my family, my community, my caste, my children, my money. It all expands from the attraction between male and female, which makes the sense of I and mine very, very strong. So to cut that seems, there's this. Even if one follows the principles of civilized human life, which requires that one uses one's senses under limitations, particularly the sexual urge is very, very dangerous in bewildering the conditioned soul, even one who is endeavoring to control the senses. There are many examples, both in Shastra and in our personal life we see all around us. So although one may physically control the senses, but it seems very difficult to control the desire to indulge the senses in sense gratification. And as long as that desire is there, then one cannot be situated in pure devotional service. This is the purpose of the devotee, is to be situated in pure devotional service. But as long, that means free from any material desires, only desiring to serve Krishna. Because this body, with it comes a whole package of past desires, very deeply embedded, or very deep in the heart. Sometimes the example is, I don't know where it's from, it's maybe from Buddhist literature, maybe that's stolen from Vedic literature. But the example is given that just like a lake, a deep lake may be very still and calm, the water is very calm, and there's mud at the bottom, and then some air which is trapped in the mud comes up in a bubble and pops on the surface, disturbing the placid surface of the water. So it's described that even though one's mind may be very peaceful, but there may be desires very deep within the heart and not even seen or recognized, and they may just suddenly pop up without any apparent cause and cause disturbance in the peaceful mind of an endeavoring transcendentalist. We have so many deep rooted desires. This term karmashayan, Srila Prabhupada translated this as deeply rooted desires for material enjoyment. So how can we overcome this? It seems almost impossible. The clue is given here. By offering everything to the spiritual master, by having this purpose in life, let me give everything to the spiritual master, my mind, body, wealth, my thoughts, my desires, I want to do this, I want to do that. I want to do this in Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada, he often engaged devotees on that platform. What do you want to do for Krishna? Okay, do it. But another principle is to do the needful. What does the spiritual master want me to do? Srila Prabhupada said, my only question to my guru is, how can I serve you? What should I do to serve you? Many disciples come to me and ask me, tell me what is my service, tell me a service to do. For most devotees, I would say, first, work on chanting the Hare Krishna mantra attentively, follow the principles properly, get the basics in order first of all. You're asking for some service, send me out to conquer the world. Well, first of all, get your japa together. First things first, conquer the raging mind. Of course, the raging mind can help to conquer that by going out into the raging world and attempting to conquer that for Krishna. But we should know our own strength also. Just I'm thinking of this Uttara, this the son of Virat, the king Virat, very boldly going out to fight when the Kauravas came to steal his father's huge flock of cows, herd of cows. He said, oh, I'm going out to fight. And then he went out there and he saw this Bhishma and Duryodhana, Dushasana and Karna. He ran away. And a eunuch came chasing after him and dragged him back. So we may be very bold and think, what great things I can do. The first great thing we can do is if we can chant the Hare Krishna mantra attentively, feelingly, follow the principles properly, that's the first service. But this point, how we can overcome all the impurities within the heart, the various prescriptions are given, chanting the holy names, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, Nashta Prayesh Bhavadreshu, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, by hearing the Bhagavatam regularly, daily. But the clue or the factor which gives life to all these principles, to all these processes, is if we give ourselves to our Guru without reservation. And then as Srila Prabhupada prayed on the ship, as he was almost arrived in America, he wanted to be just like a wooden puppet doll in the hands of Krishna and his Guru for preaching Krishna consciousness. Now that, of course, doesn't mean that we become like some robot. That idea is completely antithetical to Vaishnava understanding. We retain our individuality even after liberation. We don't become just like some automaton. But the idea that my desires, my purpose in life, surrender to the Guru, and then that becomes in the transcendental sphere, then it's beyond the material sphere. Instead of thinking, making plans for sense gratification, we make plans how to serve the mission of the Guru. And Srila Prabhupada certainly gave us a very great mission. One can find something to do. There's something for everyone in Srila Prabhupada's vast mission, which on the macro level means conquering the whole world for Krishna consciousness. At the micro level means chanting our rounds nicely, or our service. It might not be to go out and conquer the world. Anyway, who's conquering the world? But it may be looking after our children very nicely, raising them, giving them Krishna consciousness. Everyone has service to do in Srila Prabhupada's service. And by doing everything consciously with the idea that this is for Krishna's pleasure, via the Guru, idam narayanaya namama, we're offering everything to the Supreme Lord, not meant for me, then even the ordinary activities we do becomes fully spiritual. Even looking after children, that might seem to be the most mundane thing possible, but it becomes completely spiritualized if one is doing that with the plan of giving them Krishna consciousness. What a great service to the world was done by Gaur Mohan Dey in raising his child, Abhay, in Krishna consciousness. We may say, well, anyway, Prabhupada is a great devotee. But still, he was raised by his father. He was born in such a situation where he had such a father, and his father discharged his duty in Krishna consciousness. We can follow in the footsteps and do that. So this is the real meaning of being a disciple. It's not just that, well, you get initiated, okay, now I'm initiated. Hari Bol Guruji, see you later in Vaikuntha. So it's not like that. Thanks a lot. Now I got a spiritual name. Now I'm not just one of the, now I got promoted. And I'm coming back after a little time for my Brahmin initiation. Just remember that. Just to let you know. So of course, some devotees think that they misinterpret this statement. Srila Prabhupada said that initiation is just a formality. It's not just a formality. Then why did Prabhupada say it? It's not just a formality, it's emphasized so much in Shastra. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, as I've quoted so many times, Dikha Kale Bhakta Koresh Atta Samarpan. At the time of initiation, one gives himself, fully surrenders himself. So it's not just a formality, but the ceremony is a formality. One should have that spirit of giving oneself. Then one is fit to sit in the ceremony. And that ceremony formalizes the spirit of surrender, which is already there. If the spirit of surrender isn't there, then the whole thing is just a formality. And there's no particular meaning to it. Some devotees think, well, anyway, you should have some formal connection. And that's, it says in this we used to hear previously. I'm first came to India in the mid-1970s and have been based in and around India pretty much ever since. So I've taken an interest in the Hindu culture, for want of a better term. And I've seen in this time how things have changed so much. One thing is that everyone used to know that you have to have a guru. It says in Shastra, unless you're initiated, you're just like an animal. So you have to have a guru. But many take that to be, well, okay, now I got initiated. All right, I fulfilled the Shastric injunction. So I got initiated. Okay, but they don't take it any more seriously than that. Or you have to hear from the guru. That's so many, you'll find many will go and sit. The guru gives a lecture. They sit and listen regularly. But there's nothing much that the guru says which is supposed to change their life or purify them. Nor does the disciple expect that there should be any such thing. But it's taken as a formality. I'm fulfilling my duty. And that's pious. I'm good by doing that. So we could call that a Hindu piety, which is much decreased nowadays. But such an attitude of discipleship is lacking in the real substance of the vitality, the necessary factor of that we are here to fully surrender ourselves and attain to Krishna. It's not a formality. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there are so many items of devotional service which are mentioned. Dancing before the deities, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, accepting a guru, chanting the holy names. But and it's stated for all of these, there's evidence given from Shastra that by doing this, you can go back to Godhead by doing all of them, any of them. But the spirit has to be there. There has to be a living, vital connection. Otherwise, everything can go on, but the whole thing becomes a formality. It has to be the living force of desire to serve Krishna beyond formality. Sarvartatmarpanau guru. The spirit of offering all one's purposes, sarvartha and sarvatma, one's whole self, everything offering to the guru with the faith that the energy is coming down from Krishna to the guru. I have to connect with that by surrendering at his lotus feet. And then I can also connect with that spirit of service to Krishna. Otherwise, there was one comment made by one of Srila Prabhupada's eminent godbrothers, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj. He commenting about various paramparas in the Gauriya Sampradaya. he said that they're imparting dead mantras. Guru speaks the mantra to the disciple, but they're dead. There's no life in it. Actually, the life is given by the beej. That's supposed to be the life of the mantra. That's a whole science of sound, which is somewhat touched upon in the 12th canto, I believe it is, or 11th or 12th canto of Bhagavatam. The science of sound is just touched, a very great subject. So the life of the mantra is in the bij, which comes at the beginning. Maybe there are so many, klim, hrim, hrum, that. But the life of the giver of the mantra has to have life. Otherwise, you can say the mantras, but the energy, Krishna Shakti, the energy of Krishna's mercy, doesn't come through. And it all goes on as a formality only. So for some, they think, well, it's a formality. You have to accept a guru. It's a lot more than that. And for others, they think, well, it has to be the right guru. I want the best or nothing. I got to make sure, get my chances of going back to Godhead and spend all their life looking for the best. They can never find anyone good enough. must be as good as Prabhupada, otherwise forget it. And then if we think that there are so many great devotees of Krishna, but Srila Prabhupada is unique, and we don't expect that every representative of Srila Prabhupada, or maybe none of them, is going to be exactly on the same incredible level of intense and elevated, what words are there to describe the Krishna consciousness that he lived and breathed and acted at every millisecond of his existence. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this name Chaitanya means he is Krishna Chaitanya, he is Krishna consciousness personified, and Srila Prabhupada is clearly just that also. So for some, no, I have to have the right guru, all or nothing. So that's good to have that attitude. But we should also remember, Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beej. It's not by my searching here and there and analyzing that we'll get the right guru. Of course, we are doing properly to look carefully, see what we're getting. When we're going to make a major investment, we should check it out carefully first of all. Don't just put your money anywhere. But we should remember that although that is there, that we should see carefully, look before you leap, that ultimately it's by the mercy of Krishna that we get the guru who will deliver us, or if we're self-cheating, if we're cheating ourselves, we get the guru who will cheat us also. So I've heard several examples of devotees within our movement who are feeling some trepidation that I know I have to accept a guru. Who shall I accept from? And then just confused in this matter, and then praying to Prabhupada. Or one devotee told me he prayed, he was at Tirupati, he went up to Tirumalai, prayed to Balaji, and then very quickly Krishna revealed to them, yes, here is your guru. So ultimately it's by the grace of Krishna, if we are very sincere, then we can get the right guru who can guide us on the path. Yeah. Generally, it's understood that those who take to Krishna consciousness, those who are taking initiation, they are coming in means neophyte. The terms are given there, Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, Uttama Adhikari. Kanishta means, generally we translate that as neophyte. It's often used also to mean junior. Just like we may say Kanishta Bhai, or the young brother. So it might be that someone, from a previous life, they may be very advanced. But generally it's understood that those who are coming in, then presumably they had some touch with Krishna consciousness in the previous life. Because out of the so many people who get some touch with Krishna consciousness by the dynamic missionary activities inaugurated by Srila Prabhupada all over the world, many millions of people have received Srila Prabhupada's books, have seen and heard the Harinam Sankirtan parties and Rathyatras, and attended festivals, taken prasadam, some way or other come in contact with this Krishna conscious movement. Out of them, a few so far, we don't want that it will always be a few, but a few so far have taken to Krishna consciousness very seriously. So it's understood, generally, that they must have had some contact with Krishna consciousness in a previous life, by which they are again attracted in this life to this process when they get the opportunity, when they come in contact with devotees. They may be forgetful, but they are, when they come in contact with devotees, they pick that up again. But generally, coming in at a beginning level, they require to be taught. Even if one is a great pure devotee from birth, still by the way this world is set up, the teaching is required. Just like we hear that the young boy, Bimala Prasad, he took one mango which was not offered to Giridhari, the Srila who Bhaktivinoda Thakur was worshipping. Bhaktivinoda Thakur chastised him for taking a mango which was not offered to the Lord, at which point the young boy vowed never to eat mango again in his life. So from this we can understand that he had such a strong attitude of bhakti that at that age he would take such a vow. But we also understand that he went through the pastimes of being taught as if he didn't know. So everyone has to be taught. And generally, those who come in newly, they have to get used to everything. After so much time of, even in this lifetime, we pick up so many impressions and habits which have to be changed. The whole idea of enjoying this world, that has to be turned around to living in this world only for the sake of serving Krishna. So generally neophytes, those who are coming in newly, they're considered to be neophyte devotees. But actually those who take initiation should know why they are taking initiation. What is the commitment? What is the responsibility? And by knowing this, they to a large extent automatically transcend the neophyte platform. If we know I'm here, to surrender myself fully by practicing Krishna consciousness very seriously, well, that in itself practically lifts us to the Madhyam platform of a seriously practicing devotee. The neophyte devotee is still very much on the bodily or bodily or mundane platform. Archaryameva Hareye Pujangya Shadhayehate Natad Bhakteshu Chanyeshu Sabhakta Prakrita Smitaha. He worships Krishna with faith, but doesn't have much regard for other devotees or for uplifting those who are not in devotional service. So one who takes initiation, they should be ready. This is it. Atma samarpan. Dikha kale bhakta kare atma samarpan. One has to be prepared for that. Of course, there are various circumstances. Grihastha devotees, they have to fully give themselves to Krishna as much as brahmacharis and sannyasis, but in different circumstances. It's not that Grihastha devotees, they have to surrender less, but just in a different way, that's all. Their circumstances may compromise them to some extent, but initiation is a transcendental activity. It's not that there's a Grihastha initiation or a Brahmachari initiation, but everyone who takes initiation in this way is expected to. The very meaning of it is to surrender oneself. Of course, everyone starts at the neophyte stage. But diksha means to that commitment to go beyond. Therefore, it's not just a formality. It means that one started associating with devotees, and at that stage one can be considered very neophyte. But when one has come to the level that now I must commit myself to Krishna fully, then that commitment means that one is coming to or has come to the middle level. From the middle level, Madhyamadhika, the pure devotion actually begins. This is initiation into pure devotional service. It's not initiation into mixed devotional service. Although it is possible to get people to chant 16 rounds and follow four principles by offering them some kind of idea that you do bhakti, but at the same time it's mixed with various mundane conceptions that appeal to mundane people. So it may be possible to bring people in to 16 rounds and four regs, even keeping them with a mixed up idea that, for instance, we're doing bodily welfare work so that people will appreciate our movement, or we're working hard to get ahead in our career so people will appreciate that Hare Krishna devotees are also successful in the material world. So it is possible, especially in India, where amazingly, even up to the present time, people have many people have a good degree of piety, considerably more than persons from the Western countries. So it is quite possible to bring many people in, but they can chant 16 rounds and follow four regulated principles, but the life of devotion, which causes pure devotion to arise, that will not be there. Sharanagati bhakatera pran, atanta durlabha prema, Karibare Dan Shikhai Sharanagati Pakatera Pran. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu descended in this world not to teach people to chant Hare Krishna and open hospitals. He came to teach them the process of Sharanagati, of fully surrendering to Krishna, which is the very life of the devotee, and which bestows upon the devotee the very rarely achieved pure love of Krishna. So we're not interested in increasing the numbers of neophyte devotees. Neophyte means with materially mixed consciousness. I personally, as Haripada Prabhu was saying, there are various flavors and tastes among the devotees in the Krishna Conscious Movement, among the gurus, different gurus. They emphasize different things, they have their own different personalities. I tend to emphasize the understanding of the Krishna Conscious philosophy delivered to us by Srila Prabhupada, the seriousness of practice in Krishna Consciousness and sincerity. It might to some seem to be a little dry or rigid, and others may emphasize more just chant the holy names, be happy, it's all bliss. Well, we're not lacking in chanting and bliss. It's not that we're just walking, just marching like an army, left foot, right foot, forward, grim face. We're also chanting Hare Krishna. So many devotees have been participating here very blissfully in the kirtans. Chitta Hari Prabhu, often we see he can't control his senses when he starts to chant. He has to be reminded, sometimes more than once, has to be told to, okay, now we have another program. Now you have to, otherwise he'll go on literally hours and hours and hours. Such, there's life there, such taste for chanting the holy names. And he's giving that to all those boys who have been with him for these years. So they can take that taste with them throughout their life and give that to others also. That taste that he has given them in chanting the holy names of Krishna. So bliss, yes. Seriousness is required. Otherwise, the bliss of chanting Hare Krishna, it won't come. It doesn't come only from banging a drum and jumping up and down. There are so many people, dances. All over the world, there are various kinds of dances which people do. In the modern Western culture, there are all kinds of dancing. Srila Prabhupada used to talk about ballroom dancing. I don't know exactly what he meant by that, but it's some kind of materialistic. What is that? There's waltz dancing, and then there's tango dancing, disco dancing, tap dancing. There's so many. I don't even know what they all are, but there's various styles of dancing by which people feel some kind of happiness. But the happiness of chanting Hare Krishna doesn't come from the physical movement. That some kind of happiness arises when one dances and sings, even if it's some pub songs or something like that. But this is on a completely different platform. The happiness of chanting Hare Krishna arises, the true happiness arises in the heart of someone who has already given their heart to Krishna. Kirtan is not a function of the tongue, the lips, the mouth. The kirtan comes from the heart and then comes out. Hridai hoite bole, what is it? Jibar upastit chale. something like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that it begins in the heart. The holy name of Krishna arises in the heart and is manifest through the tongue. It's not a function of the mind, what I want to enjoy. So it's this function of the purified heart who actually wants to serve Krishna, who's given the heart to Krishna, and not in some metaphorical or poetic way, but actually in life, going through all the various difficulties which this world will definitely offer us. Sometimes we see also devotees, they become very disturbed in various difficulties. But we should know everyone is undergoing difficulties. That is the nature of this world, especially in Kali Yuga, which is why we take shelter of, that's the impetus for us to take shelter of Krishna. Not that we become so disturbed by difficulties and that we forget our Krishna consciousness. We just understand everyone's undergoing difficulties. The devotee sees it as Krishna's mercy. Oh, Krishna's kindly reminding me what a miserable place this world is. I should not be slack in my devotion and my surrender to Him. Okay, there's one thing I want to read here. So we're preaching Krishna consciousness, bringing others in. We want to bring them into this understanding. It's not a formality. Bring people in, get them to chant, tell them if you chant your diabetes will be improved, or you'll get less stress, and this. Therefore, they should read, they should study the books, at least to some extent. Or if they can't read, at least they should hear, they should understand what we are doing. Otherwise, we'll simply increase the number of neophyte disciples, which Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was so much presenting pure Krishna consciousness, intense devotional service. When he saw that the number of his neophyte disciples was increasing, he didn't think, oh great, now I got more disciples. He became so disappointed that he left this world early, 10 years before. That was just read yesterday. So he didn't think, great, now I got more. Now the movement is expanding. He thought it was a cause for disappointment, transcendental disappointment, to the extent that he felt that with the number of neophyte devotees increasing, then the actual mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which he came to this world to execute, it can't be executed properly. Then the preaching of pure devotional service will be compromised by the presence of so many neophytes. Therefore he left. Gauriya Math went through so many years of confusion, and then Srila Prabhupada arose unexpectedly out of that to again preach the message of pure devotion. Not that the Gauriya Math stopped preaching it, but there were various obstacles which impeded their progress. Here's statement of Srila Prabhupada from his purport to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 24, text 205. Everyone is eligible to become Krishna's devotee. One simply has to be trained according to the approved process. It is the work of Krishna's confidential devotees to turn everyone into a Krishna bhakta. If the confidential devotees do not take up the task of elevating everyone to Krishna consciousness, then who will do it? Those who claim to be devotees but do not engage in Krishna's service to elevate all living creatures to Krishna consciousness are to be considered Kanishta Adhikaris, people in the lowest stage of devotional service. When one rises to the second platform of devotional service, his business is to propagate Krishna consciousness all over the world. Those who are active in the Krishna consciousness movement should not remain in the neophyte stage, but should rise to the platform of preachers the second platform of devotional service. Devotional service is so enchanting that even the first class devotees, Uttama Adhikaris, also come down to the second platform to preach and render service to the Lord for the benefit of the whole world. So we're not interested in increasing the number of neophyte devotees. Of course, we're not uninterested also. We're very happy to see if anyone under any circumstances starts to practice Krishna consciousness. In the last year, there's been, for those, including myself, who hang out on the internet at least sometimes, they'll know that the what's called Krishna West has become a talking point among the members of ISKCON. The idea that, well, we should preach Krishna consciousness in a way that makes it easy for Westerners to take to Krishna consciousness. So no Indian clothes, no Indian food, no shikhas, no Indian instruments. Just make it accessible to Western people. I'm afraid they may go on and say, no Indian mantras and no Indian god. Where did they stop drawing the line? But from one perspective, I would be very happy if they could get millions of people to chant Hare Krishna. I don't see that cutting off your shikha is really going. That's not really the thing that's going to change. What it is the sincerity of purpose, that Krishna within the heart of the genuine devotee, he inspires the people that they are preaching to take to Krishna consciousness. It depends on the pure desire of the preacher, which invokes the mercy of Krishna. So although clothing and various other factors, they may be to some extent external, but if it's external, then why concentrate so much on externals? By changing externals, that's not going to that's not going to make any effect on the internal, the real life, which is Krishna consciousness. But anyway, if you can do it, go ahead, do it. Get so many people to chant Hare Krishna. We'll be happy to see that. But really, this is the movement of pure devotion. And that's also part of one's surrender to Krishna. That Srila Prabhupada, he didn't insist that devotees dress in clothing that is associated with devotional service to Krishna. But he liked that. He encouraged his disciples to wear clothing like that. And in fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also described that those who are cultivating devotional service to Krishna favorably, one of their symptoms, well, he describes in the first person, describing about himself, that Gaura Priya Bhakata Vishtadhana Tilak Tulasi Mala Shobhamana. I don't exactly remember. I will wear the clothing that is worn by the associates of devotional service, by the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and will be beautified by Tilak and Tulasi Mala. Tulasi Mala means neck beads, could mean chest beads also. That's also stated in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We don't wear that. So, these are all items favorable for devotional service. Those who are more neophyte, they may not like to accept all these things. So we can make it easier for people to take to devotional service by relaxing the rules. But if we insist on the rules, especially for those who are going to be initiated, then we know that we're going to get people who are actually serious about devotion. For instance, I just beginning this talk, I said at least those who are coming for initiation, they should have shaved head, and Shika, ladies should bind their hair in the way which their, at least their grandmothers and that's been done from generations, time immemorial, as is described. The gopis of Vrindavan also do. The queens of Dwarka also do. Radharani also braids her hair. That's stated because sometimes that was mistaken for a snake on the back of her head. Such a story is there in Bhakti Ratnaka. So this is the devotional style. So you may say, well, don't say that, otherwise people won't like it, and then they won't like to join us. But maybe it's better, then don't join. You can go and chant Hare Krishna somewhere else and have your hair like a Rakshasi. That's also described. That's also described in Shastra, that with the coming, attacking Dhruv Maharaj, one symptom of the Rakshasi, their hair is loose. So that's considered very desirable by the modern Rakshasa civilization. But in Krishna's Vedic culture, the hair is tied. So we want devotees who really want to do what Krishna wants in all respects. Sarvartatmatpanoguro, offering everything, one's purpose of life, one's very being, including one's body, which includes one's hair. The man offers his hair via the barber. And the woman offers her hair by braiding it in a cultured way. We should, before imagining ourselves to be on some super transcendental platform, we can at least come to the human platform, which begins with a Vedic culture. So others may not want to do, but the guru has to come to the disciple has to come to the guru and see what the guru wants him to do, not vice versa. That the guru thinks, well, if I say this, the disciples might not like it. And then they might go away. Then I'll have less disciples. Or if I don't make it, if we don't give many rules, then many people can join chanting. Yes, we also say that. Prabhupada also said that. He said, let anyone come to the temple. There's no condition. Of course, there may be some conditions. If someone's drunk, or they didn't take a bath for the last 3 months. There are people like that in the Western world who come to our temples sometimes. You don't know how degraded it actually is till you've been there. So, and more or less, everyone is free to come to the temple. You can join in the kirtan, take prasadam, welcome. But Srila Prabhupada has said, if they want to be initiated, then they have to follow strictly. So there is a difference between initiated and non-initiated. Srila Prabhupada wrote in one letter, specifically, there is a difference between initiated and non-initiated. Initiated means authorized. Non-initiated means non-authorized. They're not recognized as being on the proper platform of devotional service. So we don't want to discourage anyone. Anyone who comes, please come, take prasad, chant with us. If you like, you listen. We also should speak in a manner that those who listen can come to a standard of more devotion. So for that, one accepts a guru for training. Training is supposed to be there. We need help to come from the platform of no knowledge of what is our constitutional position, no knowledge of Krishna, no knowledge of how to act in devotional service. So we require guidance and training. The first duty of a guru is to train his disciples, and maybe within our ISKCON society, I do this more than some others, But I need to do much more. If you think I'm being strict, well, actually, not at all. There's actually much, much more. But we have to see who's ready to accept all of that. Even in social terms, there are so many things. If we're going to introduce Varnashram for the benefit of human society, there's so many things we have to introduce, which may not be very popular. It may be very unpopular, even among our devotees. The very idea of grading people into Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra and less is repulsive to many people in the modern age. That's just one example. There are many, many things to be introduced. I'm just doing a little bit, very little. There's much, much more to be done. I plan to put many guidelines in my upcoming books. There's some protest about this Women, Masters and Mothers books. They don't know what's coming. There's a lot more. There's a lot more to come, which, of course, Srila Prabhupada said that we can't fully bring in Vedic culture as it was previously. That's not possible. But we should also know that that culture is favorable for our advancement in devotional life. And as much as we follow it, that will help us and others to advance. So we should try to introduce that. So the duty of the disciple is to submit themselves, and duty of the guru is to teach. A major way the gurus teach is through writing in the modern age, through writing books which give instruction for the present generation and for future generations also. So I'm very happy that several of my disciples are also writing in various ways, writing books, writing poems also. Srila Prabhupada is actually very pleased with poems. We don't see much of that in our movement these days, but in the early Bhakti Godhead there were many poems, which, and Srila Prabhupada encouraged that. One of my lady disciples in Punjab, she profusely writes so many poems in Hindi, devotional poems. So these are all expressions of devotion, writing poems for glorifying the Lord and His devotees, writing instructional books in various ways through the written medium, helping people to come to Krishna consciousness. So I think I scared many of you. I think it was 2 years ago in Puri, we're talking about some difficult disciples, but I shouldn't say this too much, but I'm actually generally very happy with all my disciples. But okay, that's enough. I shouldn't say too much, because if you say happy, they think, oh, good, and then relax. So, lalane bahavo dosha, to pat, Srila Prabhupada quoted this, to pat the disciples, pat them on, there's a very bad, there are so many bad things about that. Tarane bahavo gunaha, there's very good to chastise the disciples and the children. Don't let them relax. Otherwise, if you want to relax, then there's no meaning to being a disciple. It means being under discipline. And discipline means you're not allowed to relax. Not in fear. Some fear, some awe and reverence is there. But it's a happy life, no doubt. But we require the discipline, rules and regulations to keep us on the right track, the straight and narrow path. Because if we follow the dictates of our mind or the dictates of someone else's mind, then we stray from the straight and narrow path back to Godhead. So be good disciple. This Chanakya Niti was published, Patipavan. So many, Patipavan Prabhu made that book, and so many good instructions are there, which Srila Prabhupada quoted so many of them. One he quoted, Kurta putrena jatena yona vidvana dharmikaha karnena chakshusha kingva chakshu piraiva kevalam. What is the use of a son or a disciple who is neither glorious nor devoted to the Lord? Such a son is like a blind eye which simply gives pain but cannot help one see. So children, they should think that don't be a pain to your parents. One of my godbrothers, I remember seeing him some years ago in Canada. His son, he had one son, I believe, who was just late teenage years at that time, very committed in Krishna consciousness. And that devotee said, oh, he is my pride and joy. He was so happy that his son had taken up his life of Krishna consciousness. So children of devotees, you give pleasure to your parents by acting in a way they'll be very pleased to see you in Krishna consciousness. They won't be pleased to see you with a cake haircut or something like this. And disciples can think also, how I can be pleasing. Don't be a displeasure to my guru. Don't be a source of displeasure. So, how is that? How can we be like that? Well, when I joined this movement, we always used to hear that, what does Prabhupada want us to do? That was the meditation of everyone. We should always think, what would I do if Prabhupada was here? In America, they have a saying, what would Jesus do? Many Christians, they have this saying, that when you're thinking of doing something, think, what would Jesus do? In other words, to act in a godly way. How should I act? In a way that I want to act? What would Jesus do? So what would Prabhupada want me to do? So in this way, we can become pleasing to our Guru, to Srila Prabhupada, to all the devotees present in the world at the present time, those who are the previous acharyas, if we actually live sincerely in Krishna consciousness as disciples, disciplined life, committed to serve without any self-interest, willing to accept the discipline. So my duty is to guide you. Actually, Krishna consciousness is there in everyone's heart, but just to guide you on that path, because nitya siddha Krishna prem shada kabunoi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Koriyadoi. The Krishna consciousness is dormant in everyone's heart, so it's not something that I have to teach you per se, but just the process of hearing and chanting and serving guide you in such a way that will give rise to the awakening of actual Krishna consciousness. Because if you do it in a certain way, there are certain formulae. If you do it in a certain way, that will give rise to Krishna consciousness. If you do it in another way, it won't give rise. But it's not a material formula. It's not a matter even of following certain rules and regulations, but it's the attitude which is there, the sincere attitude of surrender to Krishna. Today, yes, initiation. And someone may challenge, can you actually deliver these people back to Godhead? I can say yes, by teaching them to follow the process that Srila Prabhupada gave, then certainly by the mercy that is coming from Krishna, through the disciplic succession, through Srila Prabhupada, through me. Srila Prabhupada also wanted his disciples, not only me, through all my god brothers and those who are initiating or not initiating, the spiritual current comes through. This is the method of deliverance, to teach by practice and precept how to act in such a way that Krishna consciousness will arise within your heart. So my discipleship of Srila Prabhupada means to follow Srila Prabhupada. For that we should know what Srila Prabhupada wanted. We should know what his mood and mission is. So I'm now engaged in compiling that book, The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada. I'm a disciple of Srila Prabhupada inasmuch as I am committed to his mood and mission. And my disciples also, they're disciples. It's not that you actually become a disciple simply by sitting in a ceremony. In one way, yes. But it's not that you become a son simply by being born. One has to qualify himself also. One has to be a worthy son. So the disciples, worthy son is actually known as a proper son of the father. As Srila Prabhupada once said, that some are the son, some children, they are they're the sons of the mother, and some are the sons of the father. So he said, just like my own children, they didn't help me in the business activities or the preaching activities. They simply stayed at home with the mother and let me do all the work, and they were just eating and sleeping at my expense. So he called them the sons of the mother. And he said that among my god brothers, most of them were sons of the mother, inasmuch as they took advantage. This is what Srila Prabhupada said, very heavy statements. He said that they were simply enjoying the facilities which our guru had provided. But I was the son of the father, inasmuch as I took up the family business of preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Srila Prabhupada in this way exhorted his own disciples to be sons of the father and not sons of the mother, in the sense that we simply take the injunctions of Shastra and are happy with that, just following in a ritualistic way. So initiation into Srila Prabhupada's movement means to accept the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada, means to preach Krishna consciousness, to practice Krishna consciousness, all very seriously. That's the essence of it all. That's it. In the last sentence, initiation means to accept the mode and mission of Srila Prabhupada, understand that, preach Krishna consciousness as he wanted, and to practice very seriously. Having said that, I'll finish now. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you also again to all of you for giving me hope that devotees can practice Krishna consciousness with all seriousness and enthusiasm, following in the footsteps of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.